The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
You're listening to Business is Boring, a podcast that reckons it's anything but. Business is Boring is brought to you by Spark Lab, offering inspiration and practical advice to help businesses find their edge. To hear more about Spark Lab, including details about the latest events, workshops, and business tools, visit sparklab.co.nz. And now, here's your host, Simon Pound.
Kia ora koutou katoa. Welcome to Business is Boring. Gold has been a store of value and fascination since ancient times. Rare, precious, and often unattainable. One local startup is out to change this. Goldie has just launched to be kind of like a sharesies of real things, fractionalizing gold and, into the future, other assets like collectibles, art, and classic cars even maybe. They buy gold, create a company, and issue shares in that gold or real asset, and then you can use their app to buy and sell slices or shares in that thing. They have a gold bar currently that you can visit and see and own a slice of from around $10. It's a new idea and wildly cheaper for people than existing methods of buying and selling gold. It's taken a lot of jumping through hoops and 3 years of getting ducks in a row to get here. And co-founder Cam McLaughlin, who I first met in a fun short project at work, is here today to talk the journey and the mission to change the face of investing. Tēnā koe, thank you for being here.
Kia ora, thanks for having me.
What were you and your co-founder up to prior to getting into this, as you've both got really interesting backgrounds?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, massive follow of the podcast. Yeah. And even in our dark days, I was turning to this podcast to hear other Kiwi stories. And it feels like a podcast that allows, especially when you're in those quiet, dark rooms, to hear other stories to get you through. So just a massive thanks to you for keeping this going, and it's an incredible tool to have.
Ah, that's so nice of you to say, man. It's such a privilege to get to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm even last week taking notes from Mowbray and be like, oh yeah, okay, or taking similar things, and I'm like, oh, that's similar to what we've gone through. Oh,
and it's amazing the generosity, like you say, with Mowbray, like, very, serious people with, very big achievements, right through to people just getting started, right? But everyone so generous with their experience and, not just rolling out the kind of PR patter, like, going deep on what matters to them.
Exactly. But anyway, sorry, I took that off. So, Glenn and myself were just two everyday retail investors and complete stark opposites to each other. He's a chartered accountant, two police officer parents, has the moustache, which I think takes inspiration from that. He's very money savvy, very intelligent, and really the back-end engine behind Goldie. And from my side, being a square peg in a round hole often, just couldn't have been fortunate enough to find someone to partner with that complements all the weaknesses in my area. And I think the testament to us surviving for 3 years and not giving up is just this unique, rare occasion where both of us have stuck together and found ways around so many hurdles. Being an Australasian first, there's a reason why this took 3 years. There's a reason why fractionalisation of real assets just hasn't happened yet, and that whole naivety of when you do a startup and you wouldn't do it if you learned the lessons, that's pretty common. But I've done a few startups myself, and never have faced such a thing. And a second part to that is the rare and unique situations we were in. Obviously, Glenn being so good with, you know, financially literate, and having that home and having some money to lean on at the same time with startups at my end, and having some very fortunate things happen, we were able to keep going.
What kind of things had you been involved with prior?
So from my background's a bit more complex. Started in did an honours in visual communications and design, jumped into advertising, worked under some pretty amazing female leaders like Amy McKinnon, who now is CEO of Pix, and that came back a few years later. So I went into advertising and then jumped to the UK to kind of find myself, loved it, went into marketing there, and then slightly after time, Amy actually reached out saying her stepdad, Pick, wanted help getting into the UK, and so I treated it as a side project with zero budget, and we found a very unique way to cut through that market, and that was through trading at food markets, all the places where thousands of people flock to, and an extremely amazing culture. And we knew we were building super fans there, and then after time, we got the cut through with the Tesco buyers. And I still to this day say it's the most effective marketing campaign I've ever run.
It's so cool too. Like any time as a Kiwi that you travel through somewhere and you see picks on the shelf, you feel so proud. And it must be so cool for you to walk through the grocery huge mega stores in the UK and go, I helped get that on the shelves.
Oh yeah. And when you wear that flag of New Zealand and Aotearoa and going around, and you know, we didn't hide it when we were at the food markets, mm-hmm. and to be that odd New Zealand brand, how did you make it into Moulton Street markets? How did you get into Partridge's markets? Like, who are you guys? And being the life of the food market was a great life. It was 4 a.m. on a Saturday morning, setting up six different markets, and then jumping to Birmingham, Manchester in the same day to drive up there for 8 hours to set up food festival markets, and then come back, or Edinburgh. And it was an amazing, amazing experience, a lot of highs and lows, and then understanding what zero budget actually means really was the opposite of working in advertising. Mm. You know, you expect the client to have money. You expect the client to do these things. Mm. Why wouldn't they support this amazing creative idea?
Yeah.
And then you get the reality of, oh, that pays the bill? Like, literally making £100 to then rationalise getting a poster printed. That was where we started. And I think that's been the amazing situation that led me on, and obviously the success of Tesco's, bringing on more clients and starting a business over there and being very, very happy. And financially it was brilliant. Started growing businesses in the US, in Europe, and then COVID hit, and ended up back in New Zealand twice. And in that time, Glenn reached out, and we obviously had ties with Arepa, with basically both of us had close friends there, Zach and Gus, and Gus is Glenn's brother-in-law. So that's how we reached out, and it's been an amazing connection that we tell each other, you know, how much we appreciate each other, probably between every tough decision we have to make.
What led you to Gold?
Gold, so, I mean, we were looking at Gold in itself as a platform that allows people to gain access to, you know, these real assets. When we were two everyday retail investors, we were looking at the gold market, at what was happening there. It seemed like a good investment. We went to look at what market price would be. At right now, market price is $109,000 per kg. And at the time when we were looking, it cost us $151 to buy a gram. It took weeks to arrive. But at the time, the market price was $96. So a 57%, you know, middleman and all those types of things, and an obvious problem. And, you know, we're both, you know, Sharesies account holders, and seeing what the disruption had been there, cutting out the middlemen, and inspired to kind of take that leg and go further with it. And our model's very similar, but the back end's extremely complex, and that's what the delay has been for so long.
Yeah, tell us about fractionalising and how that comes into it, because that's been a really big part of the retail investment share ownership revolution, right? Instead of having to, you know, if one share in Amazon's $1,500, you don't have to find that. You can buy a small fraction of it and hold that. And that's been a huge breakthrough there. But it hasn't been available for things like gold in this part of the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it, the back end, highly complex. The front end, very simple. Look at a bar of 1 kg, a bar of gold. We divide into 10,000 units. And that, depending on where the market is, around $10 per decigram. And that's essentially how it works. And we keep these assets or things in New Zealand vaults in Wellington. And it's safe. It's sitting there. And we allow Kiwis to own a piece of that or own a share in that. And that's pretty powerful. And you know, we've had two aha moments, which was that finding the problem in the market. And then the second aha moment was, oh, we're building a platform that actually, this doesn't have to just be gold. This can be other things. And that led us down an amazing, exciting path. And you know, we look at our initial storyboards on where we had these ideas, and a lot of them are coming to fruition now. And art, collectibles, things like that, which now really changes how we want to, you know, engage with the community and why community is so important to us.
With gold, like, it has been like this, you know, kind of like source of fascination across time, and there's kind of like a mystique around it, right? It's something that people kind of squirrel away and a store of value and stuff. Like, what kind of, like, yeah, like, and some countries or cultures have a big kind of culture around buying and owning gold, and some don't so much. Like, what is the fascination behind gold, and where does it kind of sit in the mix of things people might invest in or own?
I mean, there's two takes on it. You've got Indian women own 11% of the gold in the world. Amazing, powerful stat. Mm. Something that, you know, really, really means something to us. And then you've got the New Zealand market, not very educated. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really interesting one for us. And when we started, were people scratching their heads on why we're doing this. And so, you know, past performance would say, you know, gold has a great past performance. So, you know, that's something that there's been a lesson not learnt. And we know we've got a massive education journey ahead of us, and not just for the, you know, people are going to look at our margins and pricings and be pretty blown away. I mean, no middleman market spot price, 0.89% on the trade, and then on the sell, 0.5%, no insurance or storage costs if you have under $300. You know, that to an educated person in precious metals is going to be, whoa, you know, never seen anything like it. That's our disruption. We knew that we were going to be disruptive in that space. That was probably where our headspace was for the first 18 months. It wasn't until, you know, we started to realize that, well, there's an uneducated market, or there's retail investors, and there's more education needed there. And so our focus actually sits in that space on how do we first start with the people who are understanding what, you know, they've already got it, maybe a portfolio, and trying to find a diversification, or excited by what we're doing. The next phase is trying to grow that financial literacy and understanding how the community is responding. So when we're talking about the community and how they're kind of where they're at, some of them aren't investors yet, some of them feel that they can't buy a home, so give up. And the way we position ourselves is actually around health, in general, mental health, financial health, physical health, and that's where we really want to kind of along the line educate these people in different ways, not just focusing on gold.
And in those terms, like, because this is like an investment product, right? And it's regulated as such if you're helping to facilitate purchase of shares and then, you know, setting up the companies and holding the gold on behalf of people. So it's not like you can go out giving investment advice, but like, what kind of role should gold be playing inside people's, you know, financial plans, because there's some kind of rules around, or, you know, best practice around portfolio construction, right? Like, you know, maybe 10% of someone's entire earnings should be in alternative classes. And amongst those alternative classes, you might find VC and PE and, you know, things like Bitcoin and stuff, right? But yeah, where does kind of gold sit in the mix?
It's a good question, because it's something we actually probably feel that there's enough education out there in the market at the moment, and enough people have an engaged community that what they say is more important than what we say. And if we can create this community to tell them, or the people who trust them, then we'd rather pull in those educators, and we don't call them influencers, call them educators, and we see long-term partnerships with them. In terms of the way that gold could be traded or those types of things, we're trying within our platform to make it more about the fun of owning these real things, and creating language that doesn't say assets, it says things. And that's it. That learning in itself came from the curve and us listening to our educators and saying, oh, what are you saying? So assets is a confusing word to use. Okay, well, what do you recommend? Things. And that's a whole campaign for us, listening to our educators who represent a community, coming back and doing that. And that's how we have to die on our sword of being community-led, purpose-driven platform, is listening, getting ourselves out of the way, to white privileged males. What do we know? What do we know about the community? So we need to lean on these other communities to tell us how we should be engaging with them, how we can help them, because our purpose and our drive is to engage with those people. So, yeah.
And if people are into gold, like, talk about what the status quo is today, because it's pretty fuzzy to me. You kind of think of like weird late night ads saying we buy gold or something. And then you mentioned before that you, with Goldie, offer people the spot price. How's that different? And what is a spot price? And how's that different to what someone might get if they, you know, take some old plates into a dealer?
Yeah, such a Glenn cushion. I often lean to him on these ones. But, I mean, it's an amazing thing from the sell side, or the margin side, the removing of the middlemen. I think people see that. That's what gold is. You go into the guy who's sitting outside, you know, Sky City, which never is a good look. And almost sometimes I think we've had cold sweats thinking, geez, are we going to come into the market looking like, you know, a dodgy gold dealer? And so, you know, that's the idea. I think people really want to own gold and hold it themselves and things like that. But what they've got to understand is that is where the middlemen always come in. You're going to a retailer to buy your shirt to then sell it back to them. That's not what the shirt costs. There's a retailer in the middle of that. And so we know that there is a market out there that wants to hold them. We'll look into ways that we can probably maybe solve that problem as well. But, you know, we'd always have that situation where there will have to be an admin in between those two. So, yeah, again, a market that needs education and understanding, and what these spot prices, I mean, I'm just an everyday retail investor. It took me some learnings to understand what Glenn was saying to me sometimes.
So that's like the spot prices are the kind of global price for that day on what the commodity's trading for, as opposed to whatever someone has in stock in their store. And they will, you know, if anyone's taken secondhand clothing in to sell somewhere and gone, oh, wow, I didn't know it would be so cheap to sell it to you when it's selling for so much. Same experience with anything where there's a middle person in the middle, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what spot price is. And it's pretty much the cost price, and how you know, that's where the fascination and the problem came from, Goldie, is seeing, you know, 96 versus 151. You know, what is that? Why is that?
And we'll be back in a moment with Cam to talk growing the business and connecting people to real things. Spark is proud to partner with the Sustainable Business Network and the Climate Action Toolbox. The free Climate Action Toolbox can provide you with simple step-by-step guides to measure and reduce your emissions. Help lead the way to a low-carbon future for New Zealand. Visit sparklab.co.nz/sustainability to find out more.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Hoki mai anō. Welcome back to Business is Boring, where we're with Cam McLaughlin of Koldi. So, what's the situation today? You've just launched. How did that go?
I mean, phenomenally well. Phenomenally well, and we're so lucky to have had such a great uptake and press exposure as well. Even yesterday, I got a message from the old man saying, hey, great article, another great article in the Herald, and text back, what? You know, and that's going back 3 years and hoping that we never knew how we were going to be received, and it's been phenomenal. And we've been fortunate enough for people to understand our future and where we actually see this going, and to pick up on our genuine goal of doing something quite unique and innovative. And you know, as a brand in ourselves, we see, you know, two people running innovation at two ends of the business. So what Glenn's delivering on at his end and what I'm trying to deliver on at my end, and the fortunate situation of actually being delayed and reaching out to, you know, the likes of previous unavailable and getting that breather time to find out who we were. I think if we had launched into the market 18 months ago when we thought we were, the success we're having at the moment wouldn't be there. And we came into this market, you know, inspired by the current financial platforms that are there and investing platforms that are there, and felt like we needed to follow suit. And it's only been the delays and the challenges and the hurdles that have slowed us down that have actually been the blessing in disguise. And that's been incredible.
Yeah, tell us about that. As wandering up to, you know, a regulatory body in a country and going, hey, we want to do something that's never been done in Australasia, and we're going to, you know, buy gold and hold it on people's behalf and they'll own little bits of it. Can you please give us a nod to do this? how does that go as a process? I think the fact that you've got there shows that they're willing to be open-minded and allow new things to happen, right? But these organisations are not famous for moving quickly, right?
Oh, you know, it's something that I can fortunately say Glenn has run the flag on, and any time he's tried to have massive amounts of conversation with me, I've tried to block out everything he's said in terms of the challenges, and you know, it's ongoing as well. And the FMA has been very supportive in understanding that we're trying to be very innovative here. At the same time, they don't know what this has never existed. So they have had to go through that process of understanding what they're approving. And that's been an amazing, amazing journey in itself. And we joke often that we've both got master's degrees in different ends of the business. And to be working on a brand even, you know, or to be stepping into the user experience or the back end of the app, we've both had to upskill. It's almost like a joke. Sometimes we have a problem and we say, I'm going to have to go upskill myself in this now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd say it requires a master's in these different areas. And again, that beautiful collaborative way that Glenn and myself work, and I don't believe I could have done that with any other person I've met. So just the sheer luck of both of us having that trust, having that ability to drive areas of the business and solve those problems—massive problems, massive mm-hmm. challenges. Let alone keep funding it, and lucky that other parts of my business and his business have kept us going.
Wow! So you've been 3 years of self-funding and supporting and pulling things together to get here.
Yeah. I got very, I was very fortunate to be working on the business that I walked away from to focus on Goldie. I've actually been off salary for 18 months. And before that, we I played a part in helping with another business partner to get rapid antigen tests approved and signed off here, and that's really what has helped us over the last year and reinvesting into that. So, you know, massive learnings and challenges there. But yeah, it's crazy, and you know the way that Glenn has managed to, you know, having a chartered accountant behind the business is huge. You know, it's the trust that I can push him on the creative side as much as I can, but knowing that we're never going to sink the ship. And that's massive for us, you know, and that's been, that balance is perfect.
And that perseverance, part of it is having the resources to keep going, but also the belief, right? Like, you know, if you've got 3 years of knockbacks and setbacks and delayed plans to launch, and you know, like, how do you overcome that or push through the doubt or the fear or the stress?
Enjoying the process as much as you can. You know, there's it's definitely, we've both had children over this process, so we're dads of he's got two boys, I've got two girls, and you know, flying to Wellington, covering those flights yourself, you know, spending 100 days on a couch, over 100, I think I'm at 150 days sleeping on the couch. And it's that actually excites you. You've got to be like, I mean, Glenn's got a spare room in his place, but I say, I want to stay in the office. I want to crush this out. I want him to turn up in the morning and be like, well, did you do that overnight? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's that, taking that pride and challenging ourselves to outdo each other in other areas and thinking each other as magic in that sense. I don't know how I couldn't actually describe what's happened over the last few years. It's been a blur. Our acceptance to the challenges is almost concerning. But to have that is a big thing. The biggest learning and the challenge that we've had is whenever we've been low in resource or having to really get into each other's business, that's the only time we've really had challenges, is that standing on each other's toes and trying to understand how we've stood on each other's toes or how that comes across to the team. And we don't have a massive team. We are very innovative in terms of the way we have resource, and we have a phenomenal brand team. We have a phenomenal dev team, and everyone is in this on the same dream.
Where do you see this going? As you talked a little bit about moving into in the future, potentially those collectibles or artworks. Like, how does that work?
I mean, how does it work? I mean, we've got a lot more hurdles to figure out. I mean, we're working on art right now. We've got our eyes on a piece, and the Herald actually wrote about it yesterday. So the cat's out of the bag there a little bit. And I guess what we're trying to do is, you know, we're in a lot of ways breaking the stigma, lowering the barrier, changing the face of ownership. You know, these are things that are not a big statements. And again, it leans back on engaging a community and hearing what the community wants. Now, our first piece, we're pretty confident in. I mean, when you say the name Warhol, everyone who knows art or Andy, you know, would love a piece of that. So it's a powerful name. And we know that and what we're doing for the art industry is going to be amazing in terms of getting people in that mindset of owning art. And maybe in the future we can start helping, you know, up-and-coming artists, how our platform will be led is community-led, you know, and the ownership of, or the ownership and shares of these things will hopefully draw people together. We can start engaging more people. When we get into the collectibles, you know, that's really exciting again. Is it sport collectibles? Is it Pokemon cards? Is it, what does our community want? And that's why our educators are important, to engage the gear communities. Have this safe place. We don't give investment advice. We're not here to tell you what to do with your money. We're going to have billboards saying we don't give investment advice, breaking that fourth wall, doing the things that you'd never expect an investment platform to do. We are breaking the stigma any and every way we can.
So how does that look? So maybe into the future you could have a world where if a bunch of people all really cared about Pokemon, they could get together as a community and go, let's use Goldie to purchase this card, and then we'll all own little shares in it, and that card then lives in a vault that they can go and visit sometimes if they like, but they have a little share of that real thing that's sitting in the vault that may appreciate in value over time. But they've chosen what the thing that's sitting in the vault is, rather than the old school view of finance where it's gold bars and monies.
Exactly. And that's why you've got to listen to the community, and that's why we hope our platform is there. So when we have a large enough platform and we have a large enough people, and everyone listening to this podcast hopefully gets behind us and sees that we will go out and find these things. And I think in the sense of having the ability to do that, and then to take it these assets across New Zealand, let people touch it, hold it, what a powerful thing. And that was that, I touched on it earlier, our second aha moment was, oh, wow, we can have so much fun. Mm-hmm. This doesn't have to even be an investment platform. Let's make this like buying a T-shirt. Let's not, you know, we've got the FMA, you know, legals that we have to, when you first sign up, you have to fill in. That's not for us, that's for them, and it's great. It means safety and security and protection, and we've been, you know, vetted to make sure we're not, you know, doing anything that wouldn't protect the everyday consumer. And that's really, you know, once you get over that hurdle, why can't this be a really fun experience? Mm-hmm. Why can't this be something that people take pride in? I own 0.5% of a racehorse. It's a funny joke, but I do. And you treat it like you own it. When it wins, you win, you celebrate. It's a powerful thing. And I take a lot of inspiration from that experience and go, you know, what about a LeBron basketball? We haven't come into contact. I've never come into contact with Michael Jordan. How could I? Like, could we bring a Michael Jordan shoe back to New Zealand? Could we, you know, we're bringing a Warhol. Warhol's already here. What about art that has been taken offshore? Mm. What about collectible pieces that memorabilia? You know, why don't we try and bring these back? Why don't we get the New Zealand community behind us? If they want it, let's bring it back. And that could be campaigns for us. We kind of see ourselves already, you might see some nostalgia coming through our brand. And that's because we want to take that line of bringing it back, whether it's bringing back, you know, we joke about the fish and chip shop and how we need to bring the nostalgia back there, or the post-it note or the handwritten message. Everything we do, and something we haven't touched on yet, is this real aspect, and we will die on the sword of being real. So, yeah, I mean, a bit off tangent, but yeah.
No, and the Goldie, you know, the name and the artist, you mentioned briefly the possibility of like bringing back works if everyone kind of gathered together to buy them and own them. How could you do that with a Goldie?
Well, I mean, you know, we need a large enough community to get behind that one, because they're over a million, well over a million, a lot of them. So what we need to do is essentially find ways to do that and be innovative. You know, let's not forget that, you know, Peter Jackson has amazing, amazing collectibles as well, and would love to catch up and talk to him one day and see if there's a way that we can even find uses, whether it's even finding ways around, you know, having someone who already is the owner and giving a certain percentage of it to it. But everything we do is tracking down that real aspect. Everything is finding that way and doing it and being real with how we approach it. And hopefully, you know, in time, giving all these, you know, it'd be great if everyone can go through their vault within the platform and just almost have this fun experience of I own that, and there's going to be a gallery down the road and I'm going to go into it and I own all these things in it. And then how do we grab those real assets and make them, put them in that digital age? That's essentially what we've done. We've grabbed with gold, we've grabbed a 5,000-year-old industry that hasn't been touched, that is boring as hell, that only speaks to the top 1%, that only for the people that really have $110,000 can really capitalize on the spot price. And now we're bringing into the new age, and we use a lot of metaphors in that sense of how we do that. Yeah.
I love the thing that I think is really interesting here is like gold and a Picasso and, you know, any kind of precious stone or anything, they're only valuable because people have decided they are, right? And that's a very, you know, seems like a kind of nonsense thing to say. It's so obvious. But I love the way that if you do have communities going, well, we value these Pokemon cards, we value these collectibles, these are the artists that we actually connect to, not just the artists that have been passed down to us as being kind of, you know, Western canon or whatever. Then if people choose what they value and gather together as a community, you can actually kind of change the things we value. And that's kind of cool, right? Because it's arbitrary at a certain point.
It's disruption again. Mm-hmm. It's actually finding, it's almost like the logic behind why art is valued at its price. And we will become the measuring board for that. And all our job is to do is, it's not Cam and Glenn going out and picking the next Pokemon card. It's not Cam and Glenn going knocking on the door of Jordan and being like, hey, can we have a shoe from you? It's relying on our expert curators. And when we talk about this Warhol, it's not something we've picked. We're trying to find past performance and making sure we've done the right checks on a Warhol to make sure that this is the real thing. There's a lot of fraudulent stuff going on in the Warhol space. So, you know, safety and security in our platform and in our assets is critical. Any gap in that space and we lose face in that sense. So, you know, even the way we protect our users is hugely important, their data, their assets and things like that. When we travel now with the gold bar, we actually don't use the gold bar from the vault at the moment until we can find out how we can really protect that. Really protect their investments. So it's really important to have that safety and security for people.
What advice would you have to people who can see an opportunity, like, you know, 50% odd better price that you can achieve is a pretty big opportunity in a, you know, one of the most traditionally valued asset classes. But what's the kind of advice you have to someone who sees that opportunity And how do you maintain the drive to get there, to actually get to the product?
We're not there yet. Mm. You know, when we talk about this platform, I see 50 things wrong with it, and I see 50 things that need to be added to it. And you know, we took that advice of you should never be proud of your first product. And We are. We're very proud of what we've done, and that a lot of that happened in the final hour. But yeah, there's loads of things that we are completely open to and accepting of, and not having egos. We don't even see, Glenn and myself don't even see Goldie as ours. We see ourselves as probably the parents who helped bring it to life. But it's got to go off to school now, and it's got to engage with this community, and then we've got to sit back and let the community own it. And advice is probably for us is really having that open mind and being willing to not be too hard on ourselves, to challenge ourselves and know when to pace yourself or when to support your business partner, when you see them fatiguing, when you pick up the reins. And I think anyone who's going through that, I mean, reach out to us and tell us what sucks with the app as well. Tell us what, you know, it's only a web app, it's not downloadable, but, you know, again, another thing where we want to move into that, but it's a very expensive process for us because, you know, we're live trading. But yeah, I mean, for anyone who's doing that, it's about being, you know, really open to people giving feedback, and, you know, honestly, reach out to anyone who actually wants to chat. Come into the office or drop me an email. I'll happily tell you all the things. Happily give you a code. Actually, we can do a code here, which business is boring, $20. If anyone wants to sign up and have an extra $10 of shares in their account, business is boring. I'll quickly, after this, go and set up the code.
There's a little Easter egg if you made it to the end.
Yeah, if you made it to the end, thank you very much. But yeah. I think any way we can and any way we can give people that, showing that we're real in every shape of the sense. And yeah.
And as a final thought, what will success be for Goldie and for you?
It's interesting. When we started this process, it was something completely different. it was to be that investment platform. It was to be just another. Now it's not. Now it's changing the face of ownership, changing the face of investors, changing that, you know. I've got my background, I've got the stoic, intelligent, hardworking dad, and I've got the kind, caring mum who helped out in South Auckland schools, DSL1 schools. And it's funny, I kind of started doing the Goldie thing through the stoic mindset of doing something and working hard. And then now this out of nowhere, importance to make a difference or do things that we're not, you know, we're not campaigners in that sense or anything, but there's an amazing sense of purpose we've got. There's an amazing sense of wanting to do it. And then when we work with these educators like Takahu Kura from Māori Millennia and hearing her side or
she's giving... She's so cool.
She's so cool. Yeah. And often, you know, undervalued in the words she's saying and the words, the things she's saying in that sense. And when you have in, you know, when we've talked to people like Simran from Girls That Invest and The Curve and Vic and Soph and things like that, we hear different things. And, you know, that's where we want to take this business. We really want to take it to a sense of making something that the community gets behind. Success is a mass amount of New Zealand getting behind us. And our margins are so small that we do. We desperately need that kind of sense of the community getting behind us. We could have priced this we could have chucked up our margins, still be extremely disruptive. But we didn't. It took us a while to realise that actually we're here for the everyday person, and the everyday person has to get behind Goldie for us to grow and succeed. If we are only tailoring to the gold traders or even the well-educated retail investors, I think Goldie needs to cut through to a new layer. So that's it. We need success is... whether it's our social following, whether it's things like that. But we're not here to, we're here to break the stigma too.
Awesome. I can't wait to see where you take it next. It's been awesome to chat today. That's Cam McLaughlin, co-founder at Goldie. Kia ora.
Yes.
Awesome. So thank you, Cam. Thank you to you for listening and for everyone who helps make this happen, like our producer, Samuel Robinson. Do follow Business Is Boring wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to rate and leave a review. If you like what we do, e noho rā.
From the Spin-Off Podcast Network, that was Business Is Boring, brought to you by SparkLab. Make sure you're following Business Is Boring wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information on SparkLab, visit sparklab.co.nz.
Kia ora e te iwi, Tiahe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.